Welcome to Forests, Folklore, and Fantasy. My name is Kelly, but I write and publish under my initials as K.M. Rice. Whoever you are, and wherever you happen to be listening from, I would like to start off by offering you my heartfelt gratitude and a warm welcome to my final episode of the first season of my very first podcast. You are most welcome here. It felt very fitting to me to wrap up this season with a subject very near and dear to my heart that I have alluded to several times and in fact threatened to record this episode several times. And that is about gardening. And before I get into the subject, I want you to know that if you're a listener who is not a gardener or who is not very interested in gardening, I think you may still want to stick around because this episode may give you a bit of context as to why some of us are so nutty about this hobby. I want to preface it by saying that I am no master gardener, which is an actual thing. And I am no expert. Like most gardeners, I enjoy having fun and experimenting and observing what the plants and the environment can teach me, more so than I have any sort of formal training. I was actually quite tempted to open this episode by saying something glib, like, if you're one of the people, like I was just a few years ago, who didn't know the names of any plants and thought flowers were all just flowers, then welcome to your conversion. But I realized that it's actually not true at all. I was raised by a mother who was an avid gardener, mostly flowers because she had young children, but there were certainly times that she had a very flourishing garden, especially as we got older. And one of my siblings actually has a degree in horticulture with a specialization in commercial food production, so he is a wealth of knowledge to me, and a lot of what I've learned, I've learned from him. It's been amazing to be able to just go to him and ask him questions and advice and have that level of expertise at my beck and call. As a child, one of my earliest memories around plants, other than my mom attempting to explain to me that you can't just go around eating the leaves of random plants, I do have a vague recollection of that conversation because I remember thinking, well, why not? We eat lettuce, we eat salad. And she told me, you know, there are certain plants that you could get very sick if you eat them. And we live in a Mediterranean climate, so we have, or rather, we used to have oleander growing. And if you don't know much about oleander, I'll share with you now that the oil it produces can be toxic. So from childhood onward, I was taught that level of respect for plants, that if you want to touch that bush, that's fine, but immediately wash your hands. Don't rub your eyes. Don't put your fingers in your mouth. Don't put them in your nose, because it could cause complications. Your next question may be, why would you have a plant like that around children? Well, the answer is they are usually deer resistant and very tough. So it's something that can actually grow when you live on the edge of a forest like we do. And I'm very thankful to have that experience because, again, yes, it taught me respect for plant life and from a very young age instilled in me the knowledge that just because a plant can't move to evade a predator doesn't mean it can't defend itself. I can also recall my mother growing bulbs in the spring, and there are these beautiful little flowers called grape hyacinths. And I remember adoring them before I could properly speak and asking her the name and repeating to her what I was capable of saying, which was grape papaya sin. So I, for years, she indulged me and I called them grape papaya sins. And my very final early childhood memory I wanted to share to set the stage for my relationship with plants is I can recall a time sitting at the dinner table and looking out the window and seeing what was likely some petunias growing in the window planter box and feeling so upset that they didn't get any dinner and that they didn't get any food. And I took some of my macaroni pasta and my parents found me outside and I was sprinkling it into the flowers thinking I was giving them food. And I remember this because I didn't get in trouble per se, but I did get called out, and I have a vague recollection of one of my parents saying, like, "Are you doing that again?" And knowing it was something I shouldn't do, but somehow I thought that the plants were starving, and I think they repeatedly attempted to explain to me they don't need to eat food in the same way we do. And at some point, I guess I learned to trust that explanation because I stopped, but I do know it was a repeated behavior that I had as a small child, and I'm talking like toddler. So I was fortunate enough, again, to grow up with some property and a parent who was interested in cultivating plants. So I always had roses around me, and I always had lots of different types of flowers. As we got older, I was interested in growing vegetables. But again, since I had a sibling who was practicing horticulture, that was sort of his domain. And I felt like that wasn't something that I could set foot in because vicariously through him, I understood just how much education goes into even just keeping one vegetable alive. As he graduated school and started working more and had less time for the garden himself, my mother was maintaining it. But in 2021, I had an eye procedure and I was very restricted in my physical activity recovering the surgery. It was a cataract surgery at my tender age. There's a whole backstory behind that, but that's not what this episode is about. And yes, I did share a little bit of the story back in my episode about cozy gaming. So in this recovery period, I was able to play The Sims quite a bit and made this character, this person, and gave her what I thought was an idealized life or an idyllic country life. And at some point checked in with myself and said, wait a minute, what is my character, my sim, my virtual doll, basically, doing that I'm not? If she's living her best life and I think that's the best life, why am I not living that life? And one of the realizations I had, other than, you know, her cutesy clothing, an outfit of which I have 100% attempted to replicate. It's dark forest green corduroy overalls with a fox on the bib. Actually, shortalls. So overall shorts. I'm obsessed with overalls and shortalls. I have been my entire life. And yes, I did manage to recreate that. But other than that, I realized I really enjoyed that she was able to garden. And I realized that not only have I had a long suppressed desire to attempt to grow some of my own food, but also to have a cut flower garden to the point that I didn't feel stricken with guilt every time I cut off a bloom to bring inside. So in 2021, I accompanied my mom to the local, one of our many local garden centers, and had such a wonderful time that I even wrote about it in my journal. I bought a pumpkin seedling and some other vegetables and was like, you mean I can just like go into the garden and start growing things? And she's like, why not? That's always been available. It was just more of a mental, respectful distance that I was keeping because I felt like it was the realm of others. And to be invited into that realm was so enchanting to me and fulfilling in so many ways. And it continues to be fulfilling in so many ways, which I'm about to get into. If you've been listening to this podcast from the beginning, or you've checked out my videos on my author YouTube channel or any of my educational offerings providing history and documented folklore about Indigenous European customs and festivals surrounding the agricultural and pastoral year, that you know that I get very indulgent in my academic side, and I tend to deep dive into the intellectual side of things as part of my process of wrapping my head around and understanding any given subject, really. And with gardening, it was no different. So I spent probably the better part of 2 years learning from as many different resources as I could. And I began with vegetables because I wanted the gratification of being able to eat something that I helped grow, and spent almost all of my free time basically watching YouTubers. There's some that I still really enjoy that I find very helpful, but I don't quite as obsessively watch these videos, and because what I found to be really fascinating was, I'll use potatoes as an example, and I did document my initial journey with potatoes on our web series Happy Hobbit, from planting the potatoes to harvesting them, experimenting with the sizes of the containers, with if they have been chitted or not, and that's just cutting a potato into pieces to get more bang for your buck, because you grow potatoes from actual seed potatoes. You can actually also grow them from seeds or from berries, but I'm not going to get into that because this isn't supposed to be about specifics. But suffice it to say that I watched so many different videos from so many different gardeners about a crop that has been part of the European diet for hundreds of years, part of the diet of the Americas for thousands. And what I was shocked to discover was that nearly every different gardener I watched had different methods of how to grow it, different best practices, indeed, different concepts of what was going on under the soil line. And that blew my mind because I thought, don't we completely know how potatoes grow? So the question seems to be around hilling potatoes. I know I said I wasn't going to get into a ton of specifics, but I have to give you a little background. So potatoes are tubers that grow underground, but if they get exposed to sunlight, they produce a compound called solanine. Potatoes are actually in the nightshade family, just like tomatoes are. And we evolved to eat levels of solanine, which is a toxin, and completely flush it out of our bodies without symptoms, with no problem. However, if you have a potato that's been exposed to sunlight, that compound will concentrate. You can tell that that's happening because you'll see green in the potato. And while for most people it won't cause more than a little bit of stomach upset, I think there was a guy at the turn of the last century who like intentionally ate as many green potatoes as he could and he died or something like that. But it's in general, you want to avoid that. So the way to avoid it, as the potatoes are growing and expanding, and again, we've bred them this way, right? We've bred them to be big, is to keep covering the growing plant stem with soil or another medium. You can use straw, you can use hay, you can use leaves. And what I found fascinating was some gardeners just left it at that and said, you know, you're just covering what's growing underground because they tend to form near the surface. Other gardeners went so far as to say, oh yeah, the more soil you pile on and the taller the plant gets, the more space as it goes vertically, it has to form new tubers. I don't think that that's necessarily the case, yet that was being presented. And you know, maybe it's a variety thing. Maybe there are certain varieties of potatoes that grow that way. But long story short, I was surprised to see that there wasn't necessarily a consensus on some of these growing methods that I thought would have been done and dusted hundreds of years ago. And that just opened my eyes to food production in general and how varied it is and how much it differs by climate and location and, of course, tradition and equipment. And what it comes down to with gardening is that everyone more or less finds something that works for them in their environment, and they tend to experiment with that to get to that place. And sometimes once you find what works, you want to stick with it. I chose potatoes as one of my first crops because they are not very labor intensive and they have the potential, in the right circumstances, again, for a very high yield. So there are a lot of people in my household. And in my first few years, especially, I was very much focused on food production and creating a garden that could supplement my family's diet. Now, when you're talking upwards of six people, there's only so much a backyard garden can provide. And potatoes were a crop that I could grow and every few meals have the portion of carbs or of potato vegetables be completely from the garden. And that's been so satisfying and rewarding. I have since scaled back a bit on my goal of trying to grow enough to have a noticeable impact on my family's diet, because it's just not that achievable. And in fact, that makes me laugh at a lot of these homesteading shows where sometimes I don't know who's writing the script for these, but they'll show a garden a quarter the size of mine, just a few beds, and say, now that they have a garden to feed their family with, they don't have to worry about going to the grocery store and buying vegetables. And it just makes me, and probably everyone else who has even just a rudimentary knowledge of agriculture, die laughing. Because first off, it's seasonal. You only get fruit and vegetables in the summer. There are a few winter crops, but they grow really slow because our hours of daylight are dramatically shortened and it's cold. So no, you can't really feed your family from a little vegetable patch and call it any form of self-sufficiency if you don't want to starve. But supplementing your diet, yeah, that's doable. So in an attempt to avoid that frustration, I switched in more recent years to working with my climate. I have a tendency to want to do what I shouldn't do, and I got interested in growing all of these vegetables that, of course, I'd been exposed to in Ireland and the United Kingdom, which have dramatically different climates than central northern California. And the last few years, I decided to avoid the stress, stop torturing vegetables by trying to force them to grow where they don't want to grow, and start focusing on and working with the vegetables that actually enjoy growing here, like tomatoes and tomatillos and peppers and sunflowers. And we've had a great strawberry harvest so far this year. I have a little berry patch going, and I'm still growing potatoes and things of that nature, pole beans. So I'm really excited to see what this year brings for the garden. And I have also decided to branch out and focus more on flowers, because they can be even more carefree than vegetables. And you still get that wonderful reward of viewing the flowers and watching pollinators visit them. And if you have enough, you can make a cut flower bouquet. So now that we've established where I'm at in my gardening journey, I thought it would be important to talk about the many benefits of gardening that have been documented by scientific studies. I'm not going to cite any specific studies, just suffice it to say that they are plentiful and that a quick search will yield a lot of results. So as ever, don't just take my word for it. You can back this up with a little bit of digging on your own. Get it? That was a pun that I came up with right in the moment, and it made me feel really clever. There are a multitude of benefits to gardening, and I'm saying gardening on the whole, like having a little patch of flowers, having some stuff growing in pots that's on your balcony, or even house plants, and even to the extent of trying to grow supplemental food like I am doing. There are a lot of different reasons that this hobby, I'll call it, has health benefits. The health benefits are pretty much everything. Like, there was one study that was like, gardening lowers your risk of, like, everything. Some of that's attributed to gardeners having a tendency to eat healthier because we want to eat the vegetables and fruits that we grow. I think that that's true of the type of personality, but again, I don't think that most people's vegetable patches have a yield high enough to really cause a shift in their nutritional intake. However, one really exciting part about gardening, actually two really exciting parts, is that not only do you know exactly, more or less, what your plant was exposed to, so you can control its growing environment to an extent, you can get even organic fertilizers that have trace minerals and trace nutrients that have been depleted in our industrialized farmland. They have those as part of the fertilizer, so you can work that into your soil and know that those plants are in turn absorbing some of these really essential nutrients that we're just not necessarily getting enough of in our traditional growing methods with industrialized farming. So you can add those things to the soil. You can also grow varieties that were never industrialized. It blew my mind to learn that there were so many different types of carrots and peppers and vegetables I had never even heard of, much less seen. And I live in a part of California that produces a lot of the produce for the rest of the country. I have been absolutely spoiled by being able to walk into any local grocery store any time of the year and have a plethora of locally grown fruits and vegetables, often organically grown too. And to have come from that place of privilege and to see that there's even more I didn't know about has been really exhilarating, because then I can grow those things. I can grow as many purple carrots and purple peppers and purple potatoes as I want. I can grow salsify, or maybe it's pronounced salsify. See, it's so exotic, I don't even know, which is a root vegetable sometimes called oyster plant because it has a taste reminiscent to seafood. It's also very reminiscent of artichoke. And I grew that 1 year because I wanted to know what it was like. And I grew it quite successfully. So successfully that when it went to seed, I collected the seeds and I will soon be listing them on my Etsy shop if you too would like to try some of this vegetable from my garden. But it was a very popular, potentially a staple in the Victorian era. It just never got industrialized. And I'm not 100% clear on why that is, but it's like a skinny, long carrot. You can get white salsify or black salsify. And it's making a big comeback at the moment in fancy restaurants and was adapted to a lot of different cuisines. So, you know, being able to experiment with things like that and try new foods is just so exciting. But also, the third really cool thing about being able to produce your own food is the flavor. And that was something I didn't expect. I thought a tomato tasted like a tomato, a carrot tasted like a carrot. But what happens, again, as the soil is deprived of some of these vital nutrients, but also with, I won't call it genetic modifying. I've got some issues around that term because human beings have been genetically modifying plants from the moment we got interested in agriculture. If you look at like corn, what natural corn looks like, it's nothing. It is like a scant shadow compared to what corn looks like today, thanks to the indigenous peoples of this continent. Same with wheat. So we wouldn't have survived and gotten this far as a species if we weren't messing with the genetics of plants. However, some of these changes that have happened to plants in order to make them more viable or easier to farm and mass produce have had an effect on their quality and on their flavor. And those two elements do go hand in hand. So I like to quote Kevin Espiritu from Epic Gardening. He's a YouTuber and a podcaster and an author and a great gardener and a great resource for gardeners by saying that everything you grow at home is going to taste at least 20% better than anything you buy at the grocery store. That has held true for everything I've grown. Again, 20% is the baseline. Most of my fruits and vegetables have tasted exponentially better than that. And for that reason, and again, because I'm feeding so many people, we often are eating food from the garden for special occasions and just naturally began to ritualize how we consumed the food that was the product of our labor and our land and the plants that we became very attached to. So as an educator of indigenous European agricultural and pastoral customs in terms of following the what we now call the Wheel of the Year, the festivals marking the different points of the solar cycle and the seasons, I have a much stronger lived experience understanding why food production and why food security were the foundation of every, really, every extant holiday, festival, ritual. Because without food, you have no life. And getting to go into the dirt and have that connection to the plant world, to see and experience how precarious of a balance it actually is to protect and nurture and nourish a plant to fruition, literally to fruition has given me so much respect for our ancestors and indeed a sense of deep connection to our ancestors going back thousands and thousands of years. This is a very broad, speculative date that I'm giving you, but in most academic circles, it's accepted that the agricultural revolution happened about 10,000 years ago. Now, give or take several thousand years, depending on the region, and also even more thousands of years, given that there were different region or cultures that were practicing very soft agriculture, and indeed, I'd say widespread agriculture without it being considered agriculture in the traditional sense, in terms of being a fixed farm. For example, the local indigenous peoples of the area I'm in farmed, for lack of a better term, grass. For grass seed, because it was high in protein. So they did a lot of burning of the landscape to clear trees, especially to clear the pines, with the goal of preserving the oaks because they used the acorns as a food source. And in fact, families had claims to different individual oak trees, and those claims would be inherited, something I find really, really neat. But they were also interested in clearing land and burning the land to rejuvenate the grass, the native grasses, and so that they could come and harvest the seeds. So is that considered agriculture? To me, it is. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I feel like the agricultural revolution has a bit of a bad rap. It did cause a population boom of our species. It did lead to a lot of the socioeconomic strife that we still endure. It did lead to, as far as we can tell, some hard lines of labor division being drawn and roles for men and women that subjugated women in a lot of ways. All of these things are true, but it's also true that human beings have been practicing some form of agriculture for long before we decided to farm, that the trade-off of staying in one place, at least for part of the year, by farming was greater than the benefit of being roaming hunter-gatherers. So gardening, to me, is a way of not only maintaining a sense of connection with those ancestors, but just as importantly, if not more importantly, with the earth and the cycles of the season in general. There's a lot of talk these days about grounded theory and being grounded and the whole verb grounding. Gardening is the closest you can get to actually grounding. I do want to say that if you're unfamiliar, the concept of grounding is being barefoot in the grass or just anywhere that you can actually touch the surface of the earth. There's a claim that that's how we absorb electrons and that electrons are needed to neutralize free radicals, and free radicals are what cause inflammation and damage in the body. And there have been several studies done with really small cohorts that prove benefits in pain management and recovery and overall health from being barefoot or lying down on the ground somewhere where you can have a connection to the actual surface of the earth. I just want to say that most of those studies, if not all of them, were conducted by and founded by researchers who have a vested interest in selling you products. You can get grounding mattresses. You can get grounding mats to simulate supposedly the electron exchange. What I'm getting at here is that while there is supportive research, it's largely considered to be pseudoscience, and that the benefits that you can get from being outside and having that connection to the earth are free. And you don't need to buy anything, and you don't really need to worry about electrons. The benefit comes from being in the environment that we evolved to be in. I wanted to bring up grounding, or this fad of grounding, because there are actually documented ways that you can get benefits from interacting with the earth. Again, other than just spending time in the natural world, which has a plenitude of benefits to our overall health and mental and spiritual well-being. But by gardening, we are exposing ourselves to various fungi and microbacteria in the soil that in turn produce happy hormones in our brains. We get endorphins. I hope I'm using that word in the proper way. We get feel good feelings biochemically from being exposed to these microorganisms. Okay, like I'm going to take this to a really deep level. There are more organisms in the microbiome of a human being than there are like species on this planet. So what are we? Am I controlled by the bacteria in my gut and living on my eyelashes and my skin, these little creatures that I can't even see? Are they responding to their buddies in the dirt? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But if we evolved to get happy hormones or happy chemicals released by interacting with the soil, that's where I don't really feel like the agricultural revolution is the root of all evil in our society. There's a reason that our brains evolved to reward us for doing this activity. Digging in the dirt is good for you. And that is science. Now, I have also heard that walking barefoot as much as you can in the soil is beneficial for you because then more of your surface area of your skin is being exposed to these microorganisms. But there are a lot of different benefits to being barefoot. It's just not necessarily practical at all times. But obviously, that's another way that we evolved. We weren't born with shoes. I have nothing against shoes, but I'm just someone who naturally wants to be barefoot as often as possible. And to the point that I even run in barefoot running shoes, which supposedly helps strengthen your foot. It has drawbacks as well. But my meandering point is that touching the soil and digging in the dirt and exposing yourself to all of these sensory elements of gardening are incredibly beneficial. And that has nothing to do with the nutritional value of the plant that you're nurturing. It's also true that when you're gardening, you're spending a lot of time outdoors. And whether you're on the edge of a forest like I am, or you're in a suburban backyard, or you're on your patio in a city, you're still being exposed to some form of sunlight, which is vitamin D, which, as we know, over recent years has come to the forefront of a lot of our knowledge about cancer prevention and supporting the immune system and overall health. You're also doing a physical activity. So regardless of your mobility, if you have the ability to garden on any level, you're still benefiting your overall health. So this is just a glimpse into some of the reasons why we can make these sweeping statements, like gardening is good for everything and will help reduce your risks of everything. Carrying bags of soil, they're 20 to 50 pounds sometimes. Pushing wheelbarrows, having to maintain the level of agility to bend around corners and rip out weeds, or to plant something, or to harvest, or to prune something. But it also has a huge benefit for our mental landscapes. Gardening is a form of meditation for many people. It is a means of focusing on the now and the present. And when many people go into their gardens and look at their plants, they're leaving the troubles of the rest of their life at the garden gate. And you're just sitting with this being that can't communicate with you vocally. Although that said, now I promised I would try to stay focused. That said, we do know plants vocalize. We don't know why, but we do know that they vocalize. We just can't hear them. But sitting with this quiet to us being and studying it and anticipating what it needs and giving. There is so much giving involved in gardening. That's an incredible boon to anyone's mental health. And again, it forms this connection with the before folk, with our ancestors, because it is a relationship of reciprocity. You spend months protecting, nourishing, anticipating, guarding this entity, and in return, if everything goes well, you will get rewarded with tomatoes or leaves of chard or peaches, whatever it is that you're growing. And the circle continues. So it's not a one-way relationship. It is a truly reciprocal relationship. And as I talked about in my episode about redefining what is nature, having those moments where we truly understand how small we are and that we are a part of nature and that we are a part of this balance and that we're not all evil and destructive, that we can form these individual relationships with plants even, is such a wholesome, nurturing, truly grounding, I dare say spiritual experience. And I really wish for everyone to have some level of exposure to it. I really could continue on about the multitude of benefits of spending time in a garden and growing a plant. But if I haven't convinced you yet to at least give one plant a go, then I don't know. Then at least hopefully you've learned something. And at least hopefully you have a vicarious appreciation and understanding of why people like me, as soon as we hear the word gardening, can go a bit nuts. I took all of my extra seedlings because I tried to start as much as my garden as possible this year from seed, mainly because it's a lot cheaper. You can buy one packet of seeds for, let's say, $4 versus one plant for $4 to $6. So you sow more seeds than you need because you never know how well they're going to germinate or how strong the seedlings are going to be. And I took what I needed for my garden and I brought everything else to a festival we had over Memorial Day weekend here in my local little mountain town, and was trying to sell the seedlings, and I did sell some, but at the end of the day, I did not want to bring them home, and I just started telling people, take whatever you want. If you want to give me some compensation, cool. If not, you are still helping me because I don't want to bring these home. I don't have a place for them. I don't want to have to just compost them. To me, they're living beings. And it was amazing to see how many other people had as much appreciation as I have for plants and understood and knew what the plants were. It was also fascinating for me to have a bit of a mirror held up and to see my reflection and to see how far I've come as a gardener, because I met several people who were like, oh, I've heard of this plant, or I wanted to grow this, and would start talking gardening with me, and I would reciprocate and see the moment that they stopped being able to follow what I was talking about. And I thought I was talking about very basic, you know, gardening issues. So to see that I was at a level that was above just sort of average rudimentary knowledge surprised me, because I don't see myself as that way as a gardener. I still see myself very much as a new gardener. But I have several years of experience and experimentation and success and failure now. And again, that's just what so much of gardening is. It also, to me, has been an incredibly valuable lesson in letting go of any sense of control. Because you build a fence and you try to keep out pests, which is nearly impossible for our garden. Again, we live on the edge of a forest. And pests is an incredibly relative term, is it not? These are just wildlife foraging. But you do what you can to give the proper growing conditions to that plant. And that's all you can really do. The plant's going to do what it's going to do. The wildlife is going to do what it's going to do. And more importantly, the weather is going to do whatever it wants. It doesn't care that your tomatoes need a lot of sunlight and heat. It might just stay foggy for months at a time. So for all of those reasons, gardening has been such a wonderful exercise in letting go in so many ways, especially letting go of end goals, just being in the moment and enjoying the experience, having that be the goal, and slowing down. That's why, you know, I talked about slow living before on this podcast, and that's why you see so many slow living so much slow living advice rather be about moving at a different pace, such as a plant's pace. And I just find all of these things to be incredibly beneficial to my well-being overall. And I hope that this episode has inspired you to at least dip your toe into the green world. And with that, my dear listener, we come to the end of the final episode of my very first season of this podcast. I would like to offer you a heartfelt thank you, especially to those of you who have been with me from the beginning of this venture, and even to those of you who may be listening to this episode long after I first published it. You are all so welcome, and I'm so grateful to you all for giving me so much of your time. I will be back. I'm not 100% sure when, so sign up for my newsletter on my website, follow me on social media, and you will be among the first to know when season 2 of Forests, Folklore, and Fantasy returns. I would also like to thank my wonderful patrons whose recurring support is not only a mental and emotional boon to me, but a financial aid as well to help me continue to produce this podcast and to write and to take photos and to film videos and all of these things that I do as a content creator and a storyteller and a creative that help keep my head afloat in this continually difficult financial period that we're in, especially out here in California on the fringe of the Silicon Valley. I so appreciate everything you guys have done for me. And I also want to thank Mr. Lane Thomas, the talented composer, for allowing me to use an excerpt from his track, The Village, from his fantasy-themed album, The Lands Beyond, which is available for streaming and purchase at the links below. Again, I put various ways to find me online in the show notes, along with a link to Mr. Thomas's album. One last time, thank you so much for listening and for all of your support. You will hear from me again soon. And until next time, may your hearths be warm and your hearts be full. Mm-hmm.